Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Lahawa Control Interview. Lahawa is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Lahawa is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Lahawa, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on food irradiation when we come back. Well, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Well, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we read in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin or currency. And that's very true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper versus gold coin. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that if they were going to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin to destroy the people's property rights and to destroy their rights to their property. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we're first of all going to have to regain our property and our property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adults at homeschool, your adult homeschoolers. Now, if you'd like more information about private business and private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call right now the number 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about labeling on irradiated foods. When we look at food irradiation, do you know where your dinner has been? Food irradiation, or why should I even care about irradiated food? Well, the Food and Drug Administration, they're called the FDA, is in the process of making a landmark decision about the American public's right to know whether their food has been treated with radiation. That is radiation with the equivalent of 10 million to 70 million x-rays. Market research shows that consumers are overwhelmingly opposed to eating irradiated food. The same research shows that if food is irradiated, consumers believe it should be labeled. Food irradiation raises concerns that include long-term health impacts, environmental problems, nuclear accidents, and worker safety. Now, the FDA's attempt to eliminate the labeling of irradiated food is a result of the political pressure that has been applied by these same cast of characters who promote irradiation, business interests like agribusiness interests and food processors and the nuclear industry. The FDA has already approved using radiation on a wide range of foods to increase shelf life and to kill foodborne pathogens that result from filthy slaughterhouses and unsanitary farming and food processing practices. Denying consumers the label information that would inform them that the food product has been exposed to radioactive elements such as cobalt-60 or cesium-137 is a backdoor method of forcing Americans to eat irradiated food against their wills and over their objections. Here's a short history. Food irradiation has been promoted by the nuclear industry since the Eisenhower administration's Atoms for Peace program, when it attempted to put a happy face on the nuclear technologies back in the 1950s. In 1953, the U.S. Army began experimenting with food irradiation. Much of the early research money came from the Army and the Atomic Energy Commission, a predecessor of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. In 1958, Congress labeled food irradiation a food additive, and then required proponents to demonstrate to the FDA that the process was, in fact, safe. In the 1960s, the FDA received numerous requests for permission to irradiate various types of food. For instance, in 1963, the FDA, at the request of the Department of Defense, approved the irradiation of bacon. However, the FDA rescinded that approval in 1968 when questions were raised about the experiments that were used to demonstrate the safety of the process. In 1963, the FDA approved the use of irradiation to rid wheat and wheat flour of insects, and in 1964, irradiation was approved to control sprouting of potatoes. However, even though these uses were approved, food irradiation was rarely used. And in 1967, a truck-mounted food irradiator built by the Atomic Energy Commission crisscrossed the country, promoting irradiated food. It was many years later, in 1983, that food irradiation started being debated again. Irradiation was approved for controlling microorganisms in spices and vegetable seasoning. That same year, officials at Industrial Biotest Limited, a scientific testing corporation responsible for numerous studies on irradiated foods, was convicted for conducting fraudulent research for the government and for industry. The scandal did not retard the promotion of food irradiation for very long. In 1985, pork was approved for irradiation, and in 1986, the FDA approved irradiation for fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, grains, and spices. The United States Department of Agriculture began funding irradiation research in the 1980s, and the International Atomic Energy Agency played a key role in promoting the process in global forums. In 1992, poultry was approved. 5 years later, in 1997, the FDA determined that it was safe to irradiate beef, and the United States Department of Agriculture is now finalizing a set of rules to begin allowing American companies to treat raw ground beef with radiation. The move to irradiate food is a result of pressure from agribusiness interests, food processors, and the nuclear industry. These groups have used their enormous political clout with members of Congress to create vast support for food irradiation in the United States regulatory agencies, including the FDA, the USDA, the Department of Energy, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And as a result of the coordination between the federal agencies and industry over the past 40 years, an interlocking wall of corporate interests and their allies in government has coalesced to successfully promote food irradiation. The nuclear industry, with its influence over federal agencies like the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in coordination with international bodies like the International Atomic Energy Agency, is a major cheerleader for food irradiation and the new uses for nuclear technologies. This fits in well with the industry and public relations goals of putting a positive face on to nuclear power. Because the future of nuclear power looks bleaker each and every year, no nuclear plant, for instance, has been ordered and then built since 1973. The nuclear industry has been working to promote public acceptance for renewing the 40-year operating licenses of nuclear power plants. The Nuclear Energy Institute, the lobbying arm of the nuclear industry, mentions food safety in its ads promoting nuclear power. Food irradiation is especially attractive to the industry, because not only does public acceptance of food irradiation bring nuclear technologies into the homes of Americans, irradiating facilities can use the cesium-137, which is a waste product from nuclear power plants, just like fluoride, which is a waste byproduct from aluminum manufacturing. The nuclear industry is joined in its zeal for using radiation to sanitize food by the small food irradiation industry, which includes companies like Isomedics of Whippany, New Jersey. These companies have much to gain economically if the use of food irradiation increases. Currently, most commercial firms in the irradiation business sterilize medical equipment. However, the biggest boosters of food irradiation are the food trade associations, and they include the United Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Association, the American Meat Institute, the Food Marketing Institute, the American Meat Institute, and others. These associations use their enormous resources to lobby and to give campaign contributions to members of Congress, commonly known as bribes, strictly prohibited in the scripture. These economic interests used their influence to get the FDA Modernization Act of 1997 passed very quickly. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, took the lead in the Senate on speaking out on the need for reducing labeling requirements for irradiated food. But before McConnell could introduce an amendment to the Senate Food and Drug Administration reform bill, Senator Jim Jeffords, Republican of Vermont, chairman of the Senate Labor and Human Resources Committee, included the language in the bill before it left the committee. Representative Greg Gansky, Republican of Iowa, a member of the House Commerce Committee, Subcommittee on Health and Environment, took the lead in the House of Representatives. Among other provisions unrelated to food irradiation, this industry-backed law, which was signed by President Clinton, dismantled food labeling laws and triggered the current process that the FDA is going through to weaken labeling requirements. The law also directed the FDA to permit the irradiation of red meat within 60 days of its passage. Now, the three members of Congress who took the lead in passing this 1997 law have been amply rewarded by the food industry. Contributions from food production and processing interests from 1993 through 1998 inclusive were as follows. $380,000 to Senator McConnell, $84,000 to Senator Jeffords, and $153,000 to Representative Gansky. When the food industry's contributions are examined, it is not very hard to understand why Congress, the executive office, and the federal agencies, along with senior management, are political appointees and are responsive to these large and powerful economic interests. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, in the last election cycle alone, that was in 1997-98, food industry PACs contributed more than $11 million to candidates for federal office. The food industry has been generous with soft money contributed to the national political parties. From 1995 to 1998, the food industry gave $1.7 million to the Democratic Party and $6 million to the Republican Party in the form of unlimited and unregulated donations known as soft money. Now, will this irradiation solve the food safety problems? Well, although irradiation can kill a wide range of pathogens in food, such as bacteria, viruses, and fungi, proponents have focused on food poisoning from meat. The recent scares over E. coli contamination in hamburger have been widely cited as a reason for the legalization and use of irradiation as a shortcut to solve food poisoning problems. In recent years, one of the main culprits of life-threatening food poisoning is a mutant form of E. coli bacteria. Organisms found in the intestines of all animals. It's known as E. coli contamination, which has become an increasing problem in the United States. In 1994, four children died as a result of eating a fast food hamburger, and in 1997, 25 million pounds of hamburger at the Hudson Food Processing Plant in Nebraska had to be destroyed. Additionally, problems with bacteria in imported raspberries and salmonella in poultry have continued to make food safety an important issue. Proponents of irradiation present the technology as a cure-all for pathogens in food. However, this is not the case, and it is very important to examine the root causes of food safety problems like factory farms, filthy industrial slaughterhouses, and factory farms and feedlots which confine large numbers of animals in small pens where they are unprotected from the weather, and these large operations crowd animals together and create an environment where the animals and their food and water are exposed to large amounts of feces. Now, after living in miserable and unsanitary conditions, these animals are then transported to industrial-sized slaughtering facilities where as many as 300 cows an hour may be processed. The large number of animals that are slaughtered in a very short amount of time makes it impossible to keep fecal material out of the meat products. There are many other issues surrounding factory farms and slaughterhouses, including the inhumane living conditions, the feeding of unsafe hormones to animals, and the environmental impacts of industrial-sized operations. The food safety issue and these other concerns are a compelling reason for examining the way that meat comes to America's tables, because only three corporations now control more than 80% of the beef markets. That's right. Three corporations control 80% of the beef market, and they have a virtual monopoly, a monopoly control over the way that meat is raised, slaughtered, and sold. These companies are Iowa Beef Processors, known as IBP, Cargill, and ConAgra. Dr. John W. Helmuth, chief economist for the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Small Business from 1979 through 1987, said, quote, "When a few huge corporations buy, slaughter, and sell the meat products from most of the livestock produced by farmers in America, those few firms are in a position to control the price that they pay for the livestock to the farmers, and then control the quality of the meat product, and then control the price of the meat products that they sell. Such firms are motivated to pay the lowest possible price to the farmer and then produce the minimum quality meat product that the consumer will accept. In order to maximize the profits that these corporations make to meet their expectations on Wall Street. All three of the large beef corporations have been involved in contaminated food scandals, and they have all announced that they will use irradiation on their products. This gives credence to the idea that meat producers will use radiation to mask their dirty meat products. A similar situation exists in the poultry industry, where companies like Perdue and Tyson Food dominate the industry. Birds are crowded together in small cages and then slaughtered in huge industrial slaughterhouses. The animals are fed antibiotics as part of their diet to reduce the bacteria that is prevalent in their environment. These antibiotics serve a dual function. They also cause animals to put on weight. Conditions in the poultry processing plants are among the worst in the food processing industry. Furthermore, there is compelling evidence that one of the largest food safety threats is a result of importing food from outside of our country. For instance, the North American Free Trade Agreement, known as NAFTA, has encouraged fruit and vegetable imports from Mexico. Physicians for Social Responsibility recently passed a resolution against food irradiation, and they said that the biggest threat of food-borne illness comes from the growing importation of foods that are not subject to the United States standards of packaging, handling, inspection, and cleanliness. It's a situation that will require the promotion of global food safety standards. Unfortunately, with the trend towards unsafe food processing methods and the globalization of our food supply, problems with food contamination will no doubt continue. But Americans are not interested in eating food processed under filthy conditions, even if most of the bacteria are in fact killed. Consumers want their food system cleaned up. They do not just want the problems masked, and the following actions would help solve the food safety dangers. For instance, livestock should be raised in uncrowded conditions that are not conducive to the spread of disease pathogens. The USDA should be appropriated sufficient funding for an appropriate number of meat inspectors. More than 12,000 meat inspectors' jobs have been terminated over the past 12 years. Food processors should be required to test their products for bacteria and then be barred from practices like adding today's leftover hamburger to tomorrow's hamburger patties. In addition, disease-ridden slaughterhouses where bacteria-ridden carcasses contaminate other carcasses should be closed or cleaned up. Grocery stores and restaurants, especially fast food establishments, should be carefully regulated and inspected to ensure proper food handling and cooking. New technologies, like exposing carcasses to high temperatures for 10 to 15 seconds before the chilling stage, should be used. Other methods, like washing chicken carcasses in benign disinfectants, could be used. International trade agreements should provide standards setting a floor of food safety for internationally traded food. However, such agreements cannot set upper limits on food safety because some countries, like the United States, might want to set higher standards of food protection. Now, will consumers buy irradiated food? Just because the U.S. regulatory agencies have legalized irradiation, that oven by itself does not mean that the consumers are going to buy irradiated food. And this is the very reason that the proponents of food irradiation have pushed so hard to eliminate labeling. As long as food products are irradiated, American consumers will be hesitant to purchase these foods. Now, nothing is more important to most Americans than the health and safety of their loved ones. Consumers are increasingly concerned about protecting their health and, in the process, eating wholesome, well-balanced meals. They do not want their families to be used as guinea pigs in the debate over food irradiation. Public opinion polls have repeatedly shown that consumers will not buy irradiated food. A 1997 poll conducted by CBS News found that 73% of the public opposes irradiation. 77% of the public would not eat irradiated food. A Lewis Harris poll released in 1986 found that 76% of Americans considered irradiated food to be a hazard. More recently, in April of 1999, the American Association of Retired Persons and the Center for Science in the Public Interest conducted a poll on the labeling of irradiated food, and they found that consumers overwhelmingly support labeling of irradiated foods by 88.6%. There are also issues related to the appearance and texture of food that has been irradiated. A December 3, 1997 article in the Washington Post reported that after irradiation, meats that are high in fat can develop a rancid smell. And a spokesman for Iowa Beef Processors, the large meatpacking company, told the New York Times that irradiation darkened meat and changed its flavor, and changed the flavor in ways that were noticeable enough to be a problem. Because consumers are suspicious of food treated with radiation, the food and nuclear industries are anxious to eliminate all labeling. The evidence shows that consumers are suspicious of food treated with radiation, and they believe that they have a right to know if it has been irradiated. So is food irradiation safe? Well, no long-term studies have been conducted to examine the effects of eating irradiated food. However, a large body of scientific evidence raises many concerns, ranging from the creation of carcinogenic chemical compounds to the destruction of vitamins. Until the early 1980s, the FDA was very skeptical about food irradiation, but as a result of political changes and pressure from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Food and Drug Administration declared food irradiation up to a dose of 100,000 rads to be safe and in need of no further testing. Food irradiation has been approved in 40 countries, but it is used infrequently in most of those 40 countries, and very few foods are actually being irradiated in those same 40 countries. Some countries, including Australia, Germany, Sweden, and New Zealand, do not allow irradiation at all. China is the world's leader in irradiated food, accounting for 90% of irradiated food and food products. Russia is second. In the United States, when the FDA approved irradiation for some food, it used only 5 out of 441 studies on the effects of food irradiation. The agency says that only 5 were considered by the agency reviewers to be properly conducted, fully adequate by 1980 toxicological standards, and able to stand alone in the support of safety. Let me pause here and make an editorial comment. I reported to you yesterday or the day before that there were 441 of these studies that had been concluded and that 7 of those studies were used. Now, I think that the 7 studies were used by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as I recall. These 5 studies were used by the Food and Drug Administration. So whether it's 5 or whether it's 7, whether it's USDA or whether it's the FDA, there were 441 studies, and it's either 5 or 7 of those studies that have been used by government because they're positive studies. Now, I would submit to you that if there's 5 positive studies out of 441, were the other 434 studies negative or neutral? And if there were 5 or 7 of those studies that were negative, why don't we take a look at those negative studies before we jump into food irradiation? Just a thought. Hang on, let's give you a mid-program reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free package, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And a final reminder here, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. A little earlier in this article here, we read about campaign contributions being sent to various representatives like Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and Harkin of Iowa, who are proponents of the irradiation process. This process of giving gifts, giving campaign contributions, is just plain bribery. That's the bottom line. We have here in America the most sophisticated system of bribery in violation of the standards given us by Moses that says, you shall not take a gift. And these public officials should decline to take any kind of a gift, campaign contribution, present, junket, trip, benefit, ride on an airplane or anything else from anybody, including their constituents and corporations. They don't. They accept it willingly. They are on the take. They are the receivers of bribes, and they ought to be condemned for it. But going on, Kathleen Tucker, in her book, Food Irradiation, Who Wants It?, sums up the problems very succinctly. She said, some of those who have been lobbying for irradiation have suggested that 40 years of research show that there are no safety problems whatsoever. That's a lie. This is untrue. Ignoring or discounting evidence and studies that suggest damage from irradiated foods does not make this evidence go away. Unquote. And Kathleen Tucker goes on to discuss the studies done by the Food and Drug Administration itself that caused the agency to rescind its approval for irradiating bacon. The agency found after the fact the research done by the U.S. Army on bacon was flawed and that there were significant adverse effects. Adverse effects including decreases in survival of weaned young for animals fed irradiated bacon and greater losses of young for those eating bacon exposed to higher doses of radiation. Going on, the above mentioned 40 years of research also includes the research mentioned earlier, which was done by IBT, the beef processor, Iowa Beef. Three officials of this government contractor were convicted for conducting fraudulent research. And yet some of this early discredited research work is still used to this day as part of the basis for official assurances on food safety. And one of the main concerns revolves around the creation of free radicals, the highly reactive parts of the original chemical structures of food that are created by bombarding any material with radiation and then changing its chemical structure. The new chemicals created in irradiated food are called radiolytic products or radiolites. Some of these occur during cooking, but some are unique to irradiation. Not all of these chemicals have been identified, much less tested. In one experiment, 7 times more benzene was found in cooked irradiated beef than in cooked beef which was non-irradiated. Let me repeat that. In one experiment, 7 times more benzene was found in cooked irradiated beef than was found in non-irradiated cooked beef. Benzene and other radiolytic products such as formaldehyde, formic acid, and quinines are very toxic. Some are proven carcinogens. Carcinogens, those are cancer-causing agents. That's why I mentioned earlier, we're trading infectious disease for degenerative diseases. We're going to trade trichinosis, for instance, for cancer. An EPA Federal Register notice agrees that benzene is a problem. Benzene is a known carcinogen by all routes of exposure. This finding is supported by evidence from human epidemiological studies, anima data, and an improvement in understanding of mechanisms of action. Studies have now demonstrated that exposure to benzene can cause acute, non-lymphatic leukemia and other blood disorders. This is pre-leukemia and aplastic anemia. Research exists that points to the health problems of irradiated food, and a hotly disputed study conducted in India in the 1970s found significant numbers of intrauterine deaths and depression in immune response in rats and mice fed freshly irradiated wheat. There was also an increase in polyploid cells, a chromosomal abnormality, in the bone marrow of rats and mice and in the blood of children and monkeys fed freshly irradiated wheat. Similar results were not obtained from non-irradiated wheat or irradiated wheat that had been stored for 3 months prior to feeding. One of the researchers, a geneticist now at the University of Texas, strongly suspects that there are radiolytic products which are problematic in these studies. And he said, quote, in regard to polyploid cells, we do not know the significance of these cells, so we expressed a note of caution. But scientific studies have shown that they're associated with cancer. Whether polyploid cells cause cancer or cancer produces polyploid cells, we do not know. But we do know the significance of intrauterine death and depressed immune response. And I would consider that a strong factor in whether one chooses to eat irradiated food or not. If the choice was given to him, I wouldn't eat irradiated food if it was offered to me. Raltech Scientific Surfaces, under a contract with the federal government, examined the effect of feeding irradiated chicken to different animal species. Now, the studies indicated the possibility of chromosome damage, immunotoxicity, greater evidence of kidney disease, cardiac thrombosis, and fibroplasia. In reviewing Raltech's findings in 1984, the USDA researcher Donald Thayer asserted that a collective assessment of study results argues against a definitive conclusion that the gamma irradiated test material was free of toxic properties. Dr. Donald Luria, chairman of the Department of Preventive Medicine at the New Jersey Medical School, has reviewed the 5 studies used by the FDA to justify allowing food irradiation, and he is quoted in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists in 1990 saying that 2 of the FDA studies were methodologically flawed and that one of the studies, which was considered positive, actually suggested an adverse effect on older animals. He goes on to say that a 3rd FDA-cited study appeared to be conducted adequately but dealt with food irradiated at lower doses than allowed by the FDA. It was, in effect, another flawed study. Dr. Luria has said more recently that one of the major concerns is genetic damage. The proponents are focusing on the test tube studies and the animal studies rather than on the human studies. Well, that's according to Dr. Luria. Human studies are critical, and there are really only 2 human studies. Those studies were done in India and China, and both can be criticized. The Indian research, which was done on malnourished children, showed chromosomal damage, and the Chinese study was inconclusive, Dr. Luria says. Well, let's see what else we got here. Young people, older people, less affluent people, more affluent, white, Hispanic, and it should be a short-term study. And it should be a study that a substantial amount of irradiated foods, proper controls, proper design, and then do the study for about 4 months, looking for chromosomal abnormalities. Now, that should not be very expensive. Now, unfortunately, when Dr. Luria suggested while attending a major conference in Washington, D.C., where federal agency and industry representatives were discussing irradiation, that this type of study be funded, she was told that such a study is unethical and impractical because nobody would get involved if they knew that genetic damage was possible. Dr. Luria responded that if it was unethical and impractical, why were irradiation plants being planned all around the country, along with the feeding of people giving them irradiated food? Well, the well-known physician, Dr. Samuel S. Epstein, he's the professor of environmental and occupational medicine at the University of Illinois, voiced some of the same concerns in his comments to the Food and Drug Administration in favor of labeling irradiated foods, and he summarized the health-related problems as follows. He said some irradiated foods have different texture and spoilage characteristics than untreated foods. Most fruits and vegetables have nutrient losses that are not obvious or expected by the consumer. In addition, irradiation causes chemical changes that are not evident and are potentially hazardous. Meat may have a higher level of carcinogenic benzene. And all irradiated foods contain unique radiolytic products that have never adequately been tested by appropriate extraction and concentration methods. Now, there are 5 reasons in that paragraph why irradiated food ought not to be consumed by humans. Let me run over them again for you, boys and girls. Get your pencil out. Sharpen it on both ends. Some irradiated foods have different texture and spoilage characteristics than untreated foods. So it's spoilage. The characteristics are different, which means that you may, like I told you the other day, you buy a pineapple. We bought 3 pineapples the other day, brought them home. 2 of them were spoiled. No doubt they're irradiated. They looked good on the outside. You cut into them, and they're all brown on the inside. Okay, so the spoilage characteristics are such that you can't tell. It covers it up. And the store made their sale to me. I got screwed out of my money. I didn't get the product that I want. And I'm 89 miles from the store, so it's a little difficult to take it back in 2 weeks. Follow the drift? 2nd, most fruits and vegetables have nutrient losses that are not obvious or expected by the consumer. So we have nutrient losses. In addition, irradiation causes chemical changes that are not evident and are potentially hazardous. There are chemical changes. And then meat may have a higher level of carcinogenic benzene, so it causes benzene in meat. And all irradiated foods contain unique radiolytic products that have never adequately been tested by appropriate extraction and concentration methods, also known as free radicals. Spoilage, nutrient loss, chemical changes, benzene, and free radicals are the 5 primary reasons that these irradiated foods are bad for us. Now, as Dr. Epstein commented, there are also concerns about the loss of vitamins in irradiated food. Loss of nutrients could pose a special problem to children and the elderly who have special nutritional needs. It is not in dispute that irradiation causes the depletion of many vitamins. Vitamins A, C, E, K, and B are reduced. Get that down, boys and girls. Write down A, C, E, K, and B vitamins are significantly reduced by irradiation. According to Kathleen Tucker, the extent of the loss depends upon the vitamin, and more complex foods are less affected than less complex foods. For instance, fruit juice loses more vitamins than a whole orange, but losses of 20 to 80% are common. All right, now where you've got A, C, E, K, B equals 20% to 80%. All right, now let's think about that. And you go over here and you buy a pineapple, and you say, well, I want the benefits of this pineapple. But you eat the pineapple, and it has lost 20% of its nutritional value. Well, it's not the end of the world. You still have 80% of it, don't you? Let's try the other end of the scale. We buy a product, we'll call this meat, and we take that home. It has been irradiated, and we've lost 80% of the nutritional value. Well, excuse me. Isn't that the equivalent, then, of a 20 to 80% increase in the price of the product? Well, if I buy a pineapple and it has 100% of the nutritional value in the pineapple, then I got 100% of my money's worth, didn't I? Assuming that I'm not just eating for recreational purposes like popcorn in the movie theater, I'm eating this pineapple because I want the nutritional value that comes from it so that it will build strong, healthy, red corpuscles running around in my veins and will give me energy and build strong bodies 12 ways. But if I buy this pineapple and it's deficient by 20%, haven't I just paid 100 cents on the dollar for 80% of the nutritional value? Isn't that a 20% increase in the price of the product? All right, let's go to 80%. I pay a dollar for the pineapple and it's lost 80% of its nutritional value. Isn't that the equivalent then of receiving 20 cents worth of value for a dollar being spent? Didn't I then pay 80% more than the product was worth? Put another way, irradiated pineapples should be selling for 20 cents instead of a dollar, shouldn't they? Now, I'm no great Nobel Prize winner in mathematics, but I can do that kind of arithmetic. That doesn't take rocket science. All right, now irradiation then. Let's see where we're at here. Certainly with the uncertainty about toxicity, vitamin loss, appearance, and texture of food, consumers have a right to know that their food has been irradiated. That's kind of why I would like to know whether it's been irradiated or not. It tells me whether I ought to buy it or not. So how does this irradiation work? Well, irradiation is a process by which food is exposed to large doses of ionizing radiation. Radiation is created by a wide range of energy sources, power lines, computer monitors emit radiation, as do microwave ovens and the sun. When radiation strikes another material, it transfers its energy, sometimes causing heating. This changes the molecular structure of the material, leaving positively and negatively charged particles that are called ions or free radicals. The ions are chemically very active and easily recombine or initiate chemical reactions with surrounding material. Therefore, ionizing radiation alters the chemical structure of the material. In humans, this is very damaging. It causes cancer. In irradiation facilities, the food product is moved on a conveyor belt past a radiation source where it is zapped by cobalt-60 or cesium-137 or by exposing it to an accelerated electron beam equivalent to millions of chest x-rays. These radioactive isotopes create an ionizing radiation that we call gamma rays with high energy that makes food radioactive. If the correct amount is not used, it makes it radioactive. Now, great care must be taken that the appropriate amount of radiation is used on the food product. If irradiation is properly controlled, the food will not be measurably radioactive. Both cobalt-60 and cesium-137 have low enough energies to be safe for food irradiation. Cobalt-60 is not available in large enough quantities to irradiate large amounts of food. Cesium-137 is available in large quantities because it is created by nuclear power plants. It's produced from the reprocessing nuclear waste from nuclear power plants or nuclear weapons facilities. It's a waste byproduct, and it's building up at the nuclear power plants, and we need to find a way to get rid of it, a way to use it up, just like fluoride. It may be a toxic poison that costs a lot of money to dispose of, but if we could use that to irradiate our food, it would kill two birds with one stone. It is a deadly isotope with a half-life of 30 years, remaining deadly for 600 years. And obviously, the nuclear industry would be happy to find a commercial use for this waste. Cesium has an energy level of only half that of cobalt, so more cesium is needed to give the same exposure to food. Another source of irradiation is beams of electrons and X-rays created when metal is bombarded with electrons. Electrons do not penetrate materials as far as gamma rays. They irradiate only the surface of foods. This irradiation industry advertises irradiation done with electron beams as a new and improved e-beam and causes the same problems, including the creation of radioactive products, carcinogens, loss of vitamins, and benzene. However, e-beams have an added danger. They can make the irradiated food product radioactive. This is because the X-rays generated by e-beams are less penetrating and yet very powerful. E-beam irradiators used in cancer therapy have caused deadly accidents. In 1986, two cancer patients were killed when an e-beam irradiator used in cancer therapy malfunctioned. So are these irradiation plants dangerous? Inherently, probably not. But I've already showed you that the product that comes out of these irradiation processes aren't good for us. It causes spoilage that cannot be detected, nutrient loss, chemical changes in the food, benzene, and free radicals. It destroys or substantially reduces vitamins A, C, E, K, and all of the B complex vitamins. The amount that these vitamins are reduced ranges from 20% to 80%, depending upon the product that's being irradiated. So there's a 20 to 80% loss. That's the equivalent of a 20 to 80% rise in the price of the product. You take less home and pay more for it. Doesn't sound like a good value to me. Doesn't sound like a good product. Doesn't sound like it's a good process. So there's the story, food irradiation. Do you know where your dinner has been? You can probably get a copy of it if you'd like from www.dkp-ml.dk. That's the website. Well, we're about out of time, boys and girls. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. We got more on irradiation, like what's wrong with food irradiation, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the U.S. and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.